Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, what if I told you the secret to slowing down aging might not be in some cutting edge lab or billion dollar biotech startup, but in a tiny wasp? Well, today we're asking, could we possibly pause our aging process? Joining me now is Professor Eamon Mallin. He's a professor of evolutionary biology at the University of Leicester. They've been researching the jewel wasp. Welcome to the program, Eamon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What is the jewel wasp? Describe it for us, please.
It's a tiny little wasp, because people often think wasp, and straight away they're thinking, oh, there goes lunch or whatever. But it's this tiny little, it's about 2 millimeters long, and it's a parasitoid, which means it lays its eggs in other insects' pupae, you know, the chrysalis. And so basically it kills the host, the babies eat that, and then they come out. So that's called a parasitoid. And they're tiny little things, so they can't kind of, you know, their natural host is like a blowfly or something like that. So it sort of gives you an idea how small they are.
Just a few millimeters longer, like they're really tiny.
Yeah, absolutely tiny. I mean, people have been sort of trying to use them for as a model system for years because they do some very cool things.
Such as?
Well, they're basically... I mean, in the good old days, they're wasps. So that means they're haplodiploid, which means the males are haploid. They only have one set of genes rather than two. Like all bees and wasps and ants have that. Like that's right. Just a weird way they work. And that would make a lot of genetic stuff quite easy if you were interested in particular things.
Okay. So this jewel wasp... it has been observed to slow down aging, supposedly. What exactly does that mean when you're talking about a wasp?
When we hit them with this diapause, which is just their natural hibernation phase, basically a mother comes along, she's about to lay eggs, but she knows winter is coming just from the day cycle, you know, how long the day is. And so instead of like laying eggs that will directly go on to adulthood, she lays eggs that will stop the diapause at the larval stage. So basically going to hibernation over winter, right? And it's been sort of anecdotally known that those adults, the adults that come out of that, seem to live a little bit longer. So we measured it, and it's 36% longer. So for us, that would be like, instead of having an average lifespan of 80, it would be, what, 110, something like that. So it's not a small amount.
Yeah, so... this seems like such an evolutionary advantage. I'm surprised I haven't heard of it before. Is it common in wasps to be able to sort of delay when your eggs hatch?
Well, I mean, if you think about it in an evolutionary sense, the only real advantage is exactly what you've just said, when they hatch. Because think about it, you're a mother. There's no use at all the eggs hatching in the middle of winter. Like that would be a terrible thing to do. So yeah, it's not uncommon. Diapause in insects, generally, sometimes it happens at the larval stage, sometimes it happens at the egg stage, sometimes it happens in adults, depending on the species.
Right.
But it's actually a fairly common thing for insects to be able to do. It's basically, I always think of it as like hibernation plus. Yeah, it really, you know, hibernation is basically, in mammals, is basically bears sleeping. But for insects, it's almost full stop. Like we can keep those larvae in the fridge for 18 months. So, you know, if we don't want to use them straight away. So normally they'd last for 3 or 4 months out in the wild. That would be the normal overwintering thing. Mm. But they can actually, they're basically cryogenically frozen for 18 months.
And so the fact that these, when they hatch, these flies tend to live longer. Is that unusual?
That is, yeah. There's interesting things there. There's another nematode, the sort of aging nematode that everyone looks at, C. elegans. Right? So that's a nematode, not an insect.
Kind of like a worm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It has a similar thing called dour. Everything has different names, unfortunately. It's because we never talk to each other. In dour, they can pause, but they don't live any longer once they're adults.
Right.
But there was a paper very recently in Drosophila, so the fly, where they were kind of artificially slowed down and they did live longer. So it's kind of what you could actually think of why it would make sense maybe sometimes for the species to want to live longer. I can come up with a just so story. I have no proof of this, but for the wasp, you could imagine you're coming out in springtime Yeah, there's not going to be that many other wasps around to mate with. So maybe you want to live a little bit longer so that you have a longer chance, a greater chance of meeting a mate.
Right.
And that makes sense to me. I have no proof of that, but that's kind of my headcanon.
Yeah. So like if the eggs were, you know, laid in spring, by the time they gestated, it would be summertime and there'd be loads of things to mate. But if your eggs are laid at the beginning of winter, you need to give them that extra couple of weeks to actually find.
Exactly.
Eggs. Okay. Yeah. Look, I always find that, you know, like those hypotheses are interesting, but like it's very difficult to prove a mechanism. So we'll just say that's a plausible hypothesis. What is actually happening? Because there's a biological clock and there's an epigenetic clock involved in these processes. So like,
yeah,
what is the difference between these two things, and what does it mean for an animal to slow down their aging exactly?
Yes. So if you take it back to us, which is where epigenetic clocks were discovered, chronological aging is just what it says on your birth cert. Yeah, you were born in 1974, you're this old, right? So that's chronological age. Epigenetic aging is, so there's this process called DNA methylation, which is basically, a methylation is a carbon and a couple of three hydrogens, and it attaches to DNA. And it basically turns genes on and off. That's what it does in us. There's a huge amount of it on our genome. But what people notice is that over the years, that changes. So, you know, as we age, the amount of DNA methylation we have changes. And in 2013, I think it was, a guy called Steve Horvath, he did a lot of very complicated maths and machine learning and stuff and said, oh, look, if you look at these 300 sites in our genome, and measure the methylation at it, it actually gives you an almost exact predictor of your age.
Mm.
So, you know, that's brilliant, except it's an incredibly expensive way to ask someone their age, right? But what's interesting about it is remember I said almost exact. There's a bit of a wiggle, right? And when you look at the wiggle, it gets really interesting because if you smoke, you're epigenetically older. If you exercise, you're epigenetically younger. And you can look at anything like that and you'll see an epigenetic effect, right? And what the idea then is, oh, are we actually looking at real aging, like biological aging, you know, rather than just what it says on your birth cert, what is the actual age of that organism, the human being? So for example, in talks, I always put a picture of Jacob Rees-Mogg and what's your man that plays Ant-Man, Paul Rudd, right? I put them up on the screen together because they're the exact same age. I'll let you decide which one looks biologically younger. I couldn't comment. So that's the idea then of, is this epigenetic age and, you know, the real biological age?
Is it something you can manipulate? Is it something you can actually change?
Yeah.
And I guess there's a lot of age, you know, we've had a lot of discussions in this program over the last 10 years, but a lot of them more recently about aging and how we might slow down aging and gerontology and so on. And this thing of the epigenetic age or your true biological age has come under real scrutiny. And that brings us to this wasp.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of work in humans. There's a decent amount of work in mice and so on, but there's never been any work done on insects in this. And that's because the one insect that we all care about, Drosophila melanogaster, the fruit fly, doesn't have DNA methylation.
Yeah, the Drosophila, for people who aren't familiar with Drosophila, is just your regular fruit fly that everybody's familiar with, and it is used in so much scientific research. It's like there's a mouse, there's a rat, and there's the poor Drosophila, and these guys, and
exactly
the zebrafish. These animals are used over and over and over because of their utility. Flies, obviously, you can breed them and test them very, very quickly. You can do generational tests very quickly. So, yeah, so the Drosophila, which you might study a lot, doesn't have this particular effectiveness. That's why you're looking at these dual wasps.
Yeah, so exactly as you say, you know, you use them because they're so easy to you know, grow so quickly. They have short lifespans, etc. And so there's a niche there for an insect model. And when I was interested in something completely different 100 years ago when I was doing my PhD, and I asked about methylation in insects, and they were like, "Oh, methylation doesn't exist in insects." Right? This was in the I'm aging myself here. This was in the late 90s, and that was because we knew Drosophila didn't have DNA methylation. But then when we started sequencing other insects, we were like, oh, it's all over the place.
Right.
Drosophila's just weird.
Huh.
And there's an interesting question about why it's weird, but that's for another day. But in ants, bees, and wasps, it's very common DNA methylation.
So, so you have this model of epigenetic aging. What is that? How can that help us? I mean, realistically, are we going to be able to tinker with our own epigenetics? Can we really take learnings from a tiny fly and use it to stay young forever?
I mean, I think so. But of course, I would say that because I want some of that Jeff Bezos money. But I think there's two ways. Just using the wasps as like a filter. So you have like 1,000 drugs you think are interesting, right? You're a pharmaceutical company. You put them in cells, you get 100 hits that might be interesting, and then you move them into mice models. Mm. And mice models are incredibly expensive. So we're trying to say, well, hang on, why don't you take those 100, run them through the wasps?
Yeah.
And you might end up with 5 good ones that you then take on to mice. Now, that's the kind of boring utilitarian way we're trying to use it. The more interesting way, I think about how we come up with those drugs. We have all these pathways that we think are involved with aging, and we say, oh, let's find drugs that hit them, right? So we're basically going down a path we already know. But if you look at other animals, say this little wasp that does this weird thing with hibernation and diapause, maybe it's doing something weird biochemically that we would have never thought of. So we find what it's doing, and then we go, hang on, do we have that? And then you go back and you go, you might look like a whole pathway you would never think to look at.
Really interesting speaking with you, and the best of luck in your search for the Fountain of Youth, Professor Eamon Mallon, Professor of Evolutionary Biology at the University of Leicester. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.